Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the podcast known as the Energy Detox, the Crude Life, ESG University, and anything else, Joe, that I can get in there with my sports sounding voice. Did you know, Joe, I used to be a sports announcer back in the day?
Jason, we've had, I don't know how many conversations, but that is news to me. I was unaware of your, at least that element of your past.
So this is folks, my name is Jason Spies. That is Joe Sinnott. He is the host of the Energy Detox podcast. Of course, he is the executive coach to the Real Life Rockstars with Whitting Partners. He is an executive coach primarily in the oil and gas energy sector, but he will certainly go outside of that sector. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about outside your comfort zone, momentum. I might even talk about a gaffe or two that I've made on the air live. That's when I came up with the Vince McMahon of the WWE advice. If it happened live, it was meant to be. So Joe, with that, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Jason. How about yourself?
You know, not too bad. We're just about an hour away from tip off for the March Madness extravaganza spectacular for those people who would like a little timestamp on the rationale and the reason for our reindeer games and our craziness to start the podcast off. But my question to you, Joe, is let's start right off the bat here, because one of the most difficult things for anybody in any executive leadership role is that balancing of boss and friend. And right now, everybody knows that people want to gamble. People want to watch the March Madness. They want to pay attention to their brackets. They want to check out the scores. This is like one of the biggest weeks in loss of production for workplaces that exist. So talk to me a little bit about how executives can even navigate through this week, because that's one of those things where the horse is out of the barn, the snowball is rolling down the hill, and you kind of got to deal with it. But at the same time, you can't really enable it either.
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer, of course, is the answer to a lot of questions. And that's preparation. So the best thing that, you know, an executive leader or any leader, you know, any manager, even of a small team can do is prepare for the fact that every single year on the, whatever it is, third Thursday of March, March Madness kicks off. People are distracted come lunchtime and, you know, it shouldn't come as a surprise. But as is the case with many humans, when you're caught off guard or you're not aware or you're not preparing, that's when you make a short-sighted decision in terms of, you know, cracking down on people and saying, no, you can't, you know, escape to the local watering hole to enjoy games. So, I mean, the first thing, Jason, is if you have the time to prepare, or if you didn't prepare this year, you know, get your ducks in a row for next year so that when March Madness rolls around yet again, you can actually take advantage of it and use it as an opportunity to connect more with your employees and ensure maybe even more productivity in the week or so leading up to March Madness, instead of, you know, acting like the kid who, you know, didn't do his homework to the last minute and something happened and then, you know, he's stomping around because he didn't get to go out with his friends or do something fun. Well, guess what? A little preparation, a little bit of awareness, especially when it's on the calendar, basically, you know, indefinitely, until they expand it to like 128 teams and, you know, things move forward a week or two.
Prepare. Yeah, and that's a whole other podcast for another day. But I was going to ask you about, you know, just kind of some people are doing it from a team building standpoint. Other people, of course, they just do not allow anything like it in the office. So it all depends on the workplace. And a lot of people have embraced it and figured out ways to channel and redirect that energy as opposed to resist it. So let's talk a little bit about expectations now, because I found it very interesting. You know, last year, of course, it was St. Peter, right? St. Peter's had the big, magnificent tournament run. That was last year, right?
Yeah, that was last year. Yeah, St. Peter's big win there.
And they were a 15 seed, and it's pretty rare for a 15 seed to win one game, let alone several games. So it was rather interesting seeing some of the media headlines leading up to this, that there won't be another St. Peter's, and who is going to be the Goliath that goes down? And, you know, the speculation comes out. And so relate that a little bit to the business world, because sometimes you get a new employee and, boy, they're like a fax machine and a waffle maker put together. That's an old Simpsons joke, man. I just dated myself there. But, you know, a lot of times the sizzle doesn't match the steak. And sometimes the steak is everything with no sizzle. So talk to me about expectations, especially, you know, given that we're in that March Madness time when there's upset specials and people are generally wrong out of the gate. So,
well, I mean, I think you could call it expectations, Jason, or you can call it just the law of probabilities. You know, for all the gamblers that love this time of year, it's all odds, right? It's all statistics. And in terms of the expectations of a new employee or of some business plan that was put in place 3 months ago that now seems obsolete, obviously things are going to change. And the leaders that are the most successful and sustainable, if you will, are the ones who have a cold-hearted view of risk and statistics and odds. And when you boil it down to, yeah, there's a, you know, whatever, 15% chance that this new hire is going to fail miserably and that we missed something. Once you accept that, then you can ask, you know, the next questions for the next hire to say, all right, well, what are all the ways to prevent that from happening in the past or to reduce the odds of a major upset, if you will? And that's, again, where a lot of leaders who are humans, I only work with humans at this point in my career as a coach, at least, but, you know, humans tend towards the emotional side of things. It's, you know, it's in our nature. But when you can boil it down to X's and O's and statistics and say, all right, what are the finite risks to this new hire succeeding? Or again, whatever business need is out there or business decision. Once you can do that, Jason, and you know, you can then start tackling specific threats, specific risks, specific challenges, it's a lot easier to get people on board and motivate them than if you're just there arm waving and huffing and puffing and looking upset because, you know, you've hired three people in the last couple months and all of them turned out to be duds. So that's, again, and I say that, you know, working with a lot of technically minded people, so that tends to resonate with them. But I think for anyone who can boil it down to numbers, and again, the X's and O's, just like a game plan in a, you know, in the sport of basketball, it sets you up for a much more, you know, unbiased, straightforward conversation that's going to resonate with your audience or your fans, so to speak.
A lot of times in sports, there are role players. In fact, most teams have role players. And when you look at an office, a lot of times they've got role players too. And sometimes I think that we get caught up on so polarizing our ideology and our thoughts that we forget there's five teams on a basketball team. And that player that got four steals, six rebounds, and three assists actually was probably the most valuable player on that game because all of those stats came at times when they were needed, as opposed to just the regular day-to-day stuff. Now, the star athlete who got all the kudos, yeah, he scored the most points and he did all the filler work and he's the day-to-day workhorse. But there are those players that I of course think of Ray Allen, one of the best college basketball players. In his twilight years in the NBA, he went to play for the Miami Heat. And he was basically there to shoot three-pointers with a minute left. And that's what he did. And they won an NBA championship because Ray Allen knew how to shoot. I think it was the Celtics or the Heat, but he was able to basically shoot three pointers with a minute left. And he was a clutch 3-point shooter. And sometimes when I look at, you know, conferences and going to that big meeting and these other things, I think we get kind of almost one-sided and we forget that that grizzled old veteran, they can bring a lot of wisdom into this. And that young rookie, man, they can bring a spark into this like we've never seen. And that middle of the road, kind of beaten down middle management person, well, they're probably your filler. They're probably the person that's going to do the heavy lifting at that point. So Joe, talk to me a little bit about the role playing that certain organizations should be taking on a regular basis.
Well, this comes up not necessarily in the way you put it, Jason, but this comes up a lot in organizations that I work with because people, you know, individuals who have specific roles many of them cannot articulate how their role, their job is connected to the company's bottom line. And that's a huge failure. You can argue it's a failure in governance, right? When a company has, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of employees and a significant number of them, they know their role, but they don't know how it's actually connected to that company winning, to pull in some sports analogies here. So that's the first thing to address, is to help those individuals quantify their role. How are they connected to the bottom line? Because if they're not connected, then obviously there's something wrong. But when they can see how their actions and their responsibilities actually contribute to the continued success of their team, of their company, that changes the conversation, right? You're less likely to have people get lost. And on the flip side, Jason, you're less likely to over promote the individuals who might have the highlight reels and the sexy stats, but that once you actually quantify their contribution to the bottom line, it's maybe not as great as somebody would have guessed from the outside. So that's, again, if that makes sense to you, Jason, that's a lot of what I do, because when I'm working with people one-on-one, that's one of the first questions is, hey, how are you and how are your team connected to the bottom line? And helping them answer that question is one of the first things to understand, all right, well, how the heck are you expected to collaborate better with your teammates and other departments if you don't know your value, you don't know your role, basically, Jason? And in many cases, you don't know how valuable you really are.
All right. Now we got a Mike Krzyzewski and Phil Jackson this, because now you got to manage the egos, because now you're an employee. I'm sorry. You're a coach, or you're a manager, or you're a executive that's got to manage all these type A personalities that were just told their whole life how special they are. And then they got hired and just told how important their job is. They're the most important person in the company. You know, Joe, there are CEOs who have told me that before. Okay. I was at a hotel as a restaurant manager, being told I'm the most important employee out of the 3,000 employees in that whole place, not the housekeeping staff, that poor woman that's dealing with 90% turnover. But anyway, so shout out to all the housekeeping staff in the hospitality industry. My heart goes out to you every single day. Joe, talk to me about managing some of those egos and type A personalities, because whether it's in sports or business, that is a really, really difficult thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I agree 100%. It is a really difficult thing to do. And one of the best approaches, not foolproof approach, but one of the best approaches is to basically ask them, so what? You know, when they become so proud of some system they put in place, or something they, you know, if they're a new hire that's brought in at some, you know, senior level position. Okay, they might be bringing some knowledge, some experience, some results from a prior role, but does it matter? How does it matter? So what? And just having them answer that question again, thinking through how they can leverage it, that's a good thing, right? How can they build upon their prior successes, whether, again, it's from an external point of view, or even internally, if they've grown through the ranks? Asking them, you know, how applicable it really is, or how they can build upon that, and not just sort of kind of settle in and say, hey, look, I've got my role, I'm here until they kick me out the door, or, you know, force me into retirement, or, you know, whatever the sports equivalent of that would be. And what that does, Jason, it starts to breed a culture, a sense of innovation, continually building upon the existing talent and not sort of stagnating and keeping the spotlight on any individual. And that's the key. Because if you don't do that, Jason, you know, as cliche as it sounds, you're going to get these silos, right? And, you know, everybody's going to be working towards some intermediate goal and lose sight of the fact that you want to win. You want to win, you know, certainly games, but here in March, you want to win the whole tournament, right? And that's what happens with people that have outsized egos, if you will, and, you know, a pride that's based in former results, which is, again, not a bad thing necessarily, but by and large, the problem is they start managing their own little team. And again, they lose that connectedness to the bottom line, which is no different from somebody that might be 8 rungs down on the ladder within the organization, who doesn't even have a glimpse of the bottom line. Whether it's that person who's all the way down the line, or whether it's a person towards the top, if they can't visualize how everybody's connected, then yeah, you're going to get into a position where people just think they're the most important person out there. Or on the flip side, they don't even realize that they're important at all. Both of those are toxic. Both of those are damaging. And both of those cost companies a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of energy.
Hey, are people doing corporate retreats anymore? In your world, I've seen a real decline in corporate retreats in the last 5 years. Have you seen many of them? And where I'm going is cabin fever and spring, and you know, that's that kind of thing. And those corporate retreats used to be a great way to satisfy a lot of that cabin fever. And I'm up here in the north of the Mason-Dixon line, and we've had a lot of snow and a lot of negative temperatures this year. And you're up in Pittsburgh, so just curious, just, you know, anecdotal, just, you know, just your observation.
Yeah, anecdotally, it is definitely less, but it's interesting because a lot of companies are trying to fill the void of, you know, the pre-COVID, pre-pandemic world of boondoggles and big gatherings and things like that, where you get a little bit of kumbaya and maybe a lot of bit of drinks and food and all of that. So I have not seen any organizations who have sort of cracked the code on how to get all those benefits, Jason. But anecdotally, yeah, it's definitely less. And it's still talked about, perhaps. But this is a different world. And people are more in tune with, all right, what do people actually want? And it depends there, of course, if you lean towards remote still, if you lean towards in person, if you're hybrid, clearly all of that plays into the potential value of one of those offsites or boondoggles or somewhere in between there in terms of the language.
Of course, as I was listening to you speak, I was thinking that COVID probably had a lot to do with the decline as well. And so people are kind of resetting and right setting and doing all these different things with their company, trying to figure out how to even get their employees back in the office, let alone have a corporate retreat. So, but anyway, that's where we're at is, you know, people are just kind of figuring out what their new norm is. And we're getting there, actually. I think a lot of people are already there. And that kind of next wave is starting to come in a little bit. And, you know, when we're talking about spring, we're talking about cabin fever. We're talking about new beginnings, if you will. Our ESG University has been tracking layoffs. LinkedIn has been tracking layoffs. There's been an abundance of layoffs this year. So a lot of people are going through new beginnings. So whether it be just the spring of the fresh coat of paint or the fresh coat of Easter egg dye, if you're a Paws fan, or whether, you know, you got laid off and you have to go get a new job, or whether you just are having a new beginning. What's the advice for people this year, Joe?
If you're going through a new beginning and you've landed somewhere in a new company, if you're at that stage of the new beginning, the key is to take advantage of that excuse, the excuse to ask a ton of questions, the excuse to be ignorant. Now, successful leaders are always taking advantage of ignorance. They're always, you know, unafraid to sound like the dumbest person in the room for most audience, at least internal audiences. Externally, sometimes you got to, you know, you might have to put on a face and pretend like you know a little bit more than you do. But internally, having that humility, having the ability to ask some dumb questions, take advantage of it. You're, you know, new kid on the block, take advantage of it. For people who have not yet landed a new job, you still have lots of excuses, of course, but they're a little bit different, right? They're excuses to, you know, revisit your personal life a little bit more, revisit your timing, you know, understand what actually drives you and motivates you. You might have the ability to think a little bit more clearly than you did if you were working, you know, 60, 70 hours a week at some job. So taking advantage of those excuses that are unique, whether you're in between jobs or whether you're just starting out in a new job, those are fairly, or hopefully fairly narrow windows in the grand scheme of a, you know, 30 plus year career. So take advantage of those unique situations, whatever that means to you. Again, it's open-ended, right? What are all the ways to take advantage of this unique situation? And a lot of people, Jason, it sounds so simple. A lot of people don't view it that way, right? It's like they've already fast forwarded to, you know, they're going to get their next job. Maybe it's a dream job. And like, they're already projecting 3 years into that job. And it's just, well, wait a second. Let's, you know, it's just, what leverage do you have now? What freedom do you have now that you might not have a couple months down the road? So that's from a mindset standpoint, Jason, That's the best thing you can do when you're facing a new beginning, is just recognize this is unique. How can you take advantage of it and treat this like it's a, it's a once in a lifetime experience, right? For all those kids that are playing in the NCAA tournament for the first time, perhaps the only time, right? This is their one shining moment, so to speak. How do you take advantage of it? How do you soak it in so that you don't regret this unique opportunity that's in front of you?
You know, I think listening to you speak, I was kind of reflecting on my past a little bit. And I think one of my biggest problems has been that rather than learn from my past, I've been trying to compensate for my past. And that's a different approach. And I definitely should be learning from my past than trying to compensate for the past, because when I compensate, I get stubborn and I just don't see the trees for the forest and the reality for what it is. And sometimes I wonder if that's spring related, personality related, or just, you know, just human related. Joe, has that ever come up in your world that people are compensating rather than learning from the past?
It does. And actually, even the words you're using there, Jason, I think sometimes even learning from your past can be a bit of a pejorative, right? You know, learning from your past, that implies that maybe you made some mistakes or mistakes were made. And, you know, again, that could cause you to want to compensate. I would say, just from a visual standpoint, building on your past, you know, it's a much more positive. I mean, there's a visual right there, even learning, right? When people think learn, a lot of times they just default to sitting in a classroom and ingesting information, which is fine. There's a purpose to that. But, you know, what do you then do with it? You want to build something. You want to grow. You want to develop. So even just from the language that you use, when I'm listening to people talk and tell their stories or talk about problems they're having, sometimes it's something as small as that. And say, okay, well, how are we going to build on your past experiences? How are you going to leverage those? How are you going to move further, faster, whatever the case is? So that's, again, that's the first step sometimes. It's just changing your language, Jason. And it's not enough to just learn and intellectually understand what you could have done differently and how you're going to do things moving forward. It's, hey, where can I go now that I couldn't have gotten to if it weren't for those prior experiences? And maybe what I just said there is a fancy way of saying compensating, but regardless, in my mind, at least, when I hear that, you know, language, it's, you know, you're starting in the hole. So start positively, use those language, build, grow, develop, etc.
You're talking to a guy that takes the words all the way down to the symbols that are involved. So you're speaking my language big time on that. Let's change gears a little bit here. What's happening out in the East Coast, Marcellus, Utica, is it Appalachia? Is that the third term that's used out there occasionally?
Appalachia or Appalachia, it depends where you are. I've heard different rules of thumb in terms of who says Appalachia and who says Appalachia, but yeah, you're welcome to call this the Appalachian region, if you will, the Appalachian Basin, but certainly the majority of the gas is coming from our beloved Marcellus and Utica shales here these days.
So the last time we checked in, there was going to be a cracker plant, not a Triscuit cracker plant, but it sounded like a some sort of ethane plant that was going to be crackering out there. So do we have an update on that, or is that pretty much the same old, same old?
It's still cracking away up there. You know, there's still occasionally you'll read some headlines about some, additional thing that needed to get done or is finally in line. I think I just saw a couple days ago, they installed some new air monitors at the plant, but it's been operating. It is running and it is doing its job there. So really no update, I guess, Jason, other than it's clicking along there. That's the Shell cracker plant in Beaver County. So just outside of Pittsburgh here.
Beaver County outside of Pittsburgh. Okay. And what is that cracking, I guess? Is it just gas? Is there other things involved? What types of gas? Do you know that much into it yet? I mean, this is a pop quiz, so I apologize.
No, it's actually pretty straightforward. So, you know, in the natural gas stream, most of what you have typically is methane, but you also have, you know, lots of other molecules, and those other molecules are heavier, they're bigger, they're called, you know, NGLs, natural gas liquids, and one of those is ethane. And ethane is a key ingredient. You know, it takes a couple steps, but you know, you crack the ethane and you produce these little pellets basically that go on to produce all the plastics that our world relies upon. So it is the ethane stream from the natural gas that we produce here that is the reason that Shell, you know, stuck that plant where they did, because we got a lot of gas, and in that gas is a sufficient supply of ethane to be cracked and to be turned into lots of the products that we enjoy on a daily basis.
Of course, a lot of people might be wondering what we're kind of talking about, but there's butane and there's methane and there's pentane. That's when I realized I was out of my element in my early days of the oil and gas industry. I was interviewing John Gibson from One Oak, and he threw out the word pentane, and I looked at him and I thought, boy, you're just making stuff up now, because I'd never heard that before. But hey, he was right, I was wrong. Imagine that, Joe. The energy expert was right and the podcast host was wrong. Boy, you could.
Learned two things now. So I've learned that in your former life, there was a little bit of sports commentating. And I've also learned that there's at least one time that you've been wrong. So those are two things that I've learned here on The Crude Life during this conversation, Jason. I thought I knew you.
That's something else there. So anyway, in closing, what any final thoughts, any final words as we kind of lead right into spring here?
Final words. Well, I mean, I guess sticking with the, you know, what's going on here in the world of the Marcellus, natural gas prices, of course, are low. They've dipped. They were high at one point last year. Now they're low. And in terms of the ups and downs of the industry, there's no question that, you know, it's like it happened overnight almost, but you know, people are, they're starting to worry again. They're starting to question how long, you know, things are going to be able to click along at the current pace. And you know, that could take its toll on people. So what I would say is, and again, this comes out in a lot of the conversations I have with a lot of the people that I work with, focus on what's not changing, right? You're part of the energy industry, ups and downs, that's part of the game. So focus on what is not changing and what you can control. And as cliche as that sounds, Jason, sometimes it takes a reminder to say, hey, you know what? At the end of the day, yeah, gas prices are going down, but you know, 95% of the other variables, they're unchanged. They're still in play. And most of those variables, quite frankly, Jason, are people and relationships and connections and your reputation. All of those things are unchanged. And most of those things you can control pretty easily. So that's what I'd say to people, you know, as they look at gas prices and even oil prices. I think oil prices just dipped another, what, $3 yesterday. So just keep that in mind. And, you know, you don't, you know, seasoned veterans of the industry, of course, will talk about all the ups and downs they've been through and how they're hardened to it. But the reality is most of them still sort of feed into the ups and downs and the swings. But if you're in a leadership position, you can't let that happen. That's it. So I try not to give much advice in our conversations here, Jason, but you know, my advice to any leaders that are out there listening is be mindful of the words you're using. Just like we talked before, you know, words are important. And if you're conveying a sense of doom and gloom unnecessarily, well, you're setting yourself up for failure. You're setting your team and your company up for failure. And, you know, the odds of you making it through a grueling period like the 3 weeks of March Madness here and the six games that teams need to win, or seven games if you're one of the play-in teams that won earlier this week, you know, you're not going to make it if you're, you know, have any inkling of negativity and doubt that you're sharing with your team. So maybe that's my final word here, weaving together the world of March Madness and the world of ever decreasing and increasing and decreasing and increasing and decreasing commodity prices.
Folks, if you're anything like me, you like a good cup of coffee. And let me tell you about a good cup of coffee right now available at mystore.com. Folks, let me tell you, this is championship coffee. We're talking organically certified, non-GMO, part of the top 2%. 2% beans in the world to give you a rich, smooth, easy to drink cup of coffee available at mystore.com. Use the promo code Otis for a huge savings at mystore.com. Get your coffee subscription today at mystore.com and don't forget to use the promo code Otis.